This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Bill Dorman. We are 1 week away from President Trump's scheduled summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Our next guest suggested a number of months ago that Vietnam would be a good place for a meeting, and that's just where the two leaders are set to talk. Retired Lieutenant General Dan Leaf has been Deputy Commander of U.S. Pacific Command and has also served as Director of the Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies. Aloha, General. Thanks for joining us again.
Aloha, Bill. My pleasure.
You know, in the eyes of some, that first meeting between these two leaders was a success simply really because it happened. It was back in June 2018. Now things get a little more complicated. And what, in your view, do we need to see to have this meeting be judged a success?
I think it boils down to a single, simple, but elusive word, and that's progress. Progress that both sides can cite. So for North Korea, that means progress in its emergence, if you will, into the community of nations. And for the United States, it means progress on denuclearization, the end goal for all interaction between the U.S. and the DPRK.
But the metrics on judging that progress have to still be seemingly a little soft at this point.
Well, they are soft, and I think the two sides view the denuclearization metrics differently. North Korea likes to talk about denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and the U.S. likes to talk in various ways of describing it about complete, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization. Those aren't the same thing. They don't see them as the same thing. But the truth of the matter is we've already made progress to reducing tensions. We need to continue that progress, and I think the U.S. has to have a very long view about getting to that end game, that complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization. Find a way to get some substantial, if you will, progress that they can legitimately cite, that the government can legitimately cite as real progress.
But again, that's over time, so there's no imminent pressure really on this meeting in terms of specific metrics to come up with, say.
Well, I think there will be, certainly in the media and in political circles, you know, we do like instant gratification in the United States, and there will be some who cite it as a failure if there isn't a comprehensive agreement on denuclearization out of this second summit, but that's not a realistic goal, and any progress is important, and we just need to keep that long-term strategic target in mind.
Now, they're going to be meeting in Vietnam, which you suggested, as I mentioned, would be a good venue. We know that's within range of Kim Jong-un's private plane, but what else makes that a good location?
Well, it is convenient, and that's not a small matter. There has to be some place that Kim can get to relatively easily. Vietnam has a lot of other logistical advantages. It's a controlled, orderly society where they can have the meeting in a secure environment with enough but not too much attention from the outside world. It's a place that's comfortable to both. Comfortable to the U.S. because of the strategic relationship that's been formed over decades of hard work, and it's comfortable to the DPRK, to North Korea, because it's a communist country and never truly an ally, but certainly a country that they're comfortable dealing with. I think there's a more important psychological element of that that goes beyond U.S.-North Korea matters, and that's the exemplar that the U.S.-Vietnam relationship provides as a place where post-war reconciliation has actually worked. You know, there are many unresolved conflicts, some of them a century or more old, in Asia and elsewhere, where people simply can't get over it. The United States and Vietnam have formed a partnership that brings value to both nations and to the region, and it's been formed by hard work, and by a little bit of give and take, a lot of understanding, and a sense that the future is, in fact, more important than the past.
You know, you mentioned that progress, and certainly that's the case, but Vietnam is also not a place where human rights are a particularly strong feature. Criticism of the Communist Party, for example, just is not tolerated. Market economy is engaged, but certainly practices like freedom of the press are not. Is that a complicating factor?
I think it's a complementary, not complicating factor, because the United States, throughout this process of reconciliation, is continually but thoughtfully pressed Vietnam on their human rights practices. So we haven't given them a pass, and they haven't completely acquiesced to what the United States would like to see in terms of international norms and human rights. So it's a give and take that is imperfect but respectful on both sides, and it should, to North Korea, provide an example that the United States is not as heavy-handed as we are sometimes portrayed in pressing our interests, our desires, not as heavy-handed as we're portrayed, and certainly not as heavy-handed as some other countries that'll remain nameless.
Well, when we get past the Vietnam summit itself, in the past we've spoken about U.S.-South Korean military exercises, their importance.
Mm-hmm.
Springtime is the usual time frame for the full Eagle exercises. Last year's came before the Singapore summit and involved more than 11,000 U.S. personnel, nearly 300,000 South Korean forces, land, sea, air. How important is it, in your view, that these go ahead in some form, and is it okay if they're on a smaller scale?
Well, let's go back to the Singapore summit when there was the surprise announcement of the suspension of joint military exercises, even though in pursuing the summit, Kim Jong-un had suggested that he understood why those exercises had to be held. So we had that surprise announcement. I think it would be unfortunate if there were another suspension or a long-term cancellation of such exercises, not so much for military readiness. The South Korean military is very, very capable. The partnership between the U.S. and the Republic of Korea has been formed and honed over decades, and North Korea cannot win a war over South Korea or over the Korean Peninsula. Cannot win. Now, can they create a bunch of a really horrible level of destruction and death? Absolutely. They cannot win. So it's not as much about readiness to counter North Korean aggression as about a signal that the alliance is still strong, that that part of maximum pressure, of military preparedness to counter any North Korean military action, is still there, still important, and both the U.S. and the Republic of Korea are committed to it. That signal has to remain, because that has to be part of Kim's calculus. That, let's see, I can't win this, and I've blown the treasury on pursuing weapon and missile capability, so I have to be more accommodating and engage in discussions and negotiations with the U.S.
You know, that touches on one other aspect of all of this, too, which is international expectations. So going into this, again, for, say China and Japan, two international perspectives very different, but both very important to this process. How do you see those?
Well, they're very different. They have different interests that are kind of small and finite and not very strategic in claiming victory of their interests were advanced. You know, China has said that there are certain things on denuclearization that they wouldn't support, and Japan has a issue with abductees and other things. And, you know, so the eaches of what might come out of the summit on the progress towards denuclearization and other related issues like abductees will be of interest to China and Japan. But what's really of interest to those two countries, to all countries, is to avoiding conflict on the Korean Peninsula. And so if I were on the negotiating team, and I'm not, but if I were, I'd try to keep my eye on the ball and recognize that long-term peace on the Korean Peninsula, with its broader positive effect throughout Asia, is the objective. That's the objective during the pursuit of denuclearization of North Korea.
And given that objective, what would you say that listeners should be watching for when it comes to this summit?
If both sides declare success, I'm going to oversimplify it and say we're good. If both sides can claim success, then we're making progress. And the details of how they define success and what they cite as examples of the success that has been achieved are not as important as a sense that we're still moving forward.
We'll be watching for that forward progress. Retired Lieutenant General Dan Leaf spent a career in the Air Force and served as Deputy Commander of the U.S. Pacific Command, as well as Director of the Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies here in Honolulu. He's currently the Managing Director of Phase Minus One LLC. General, thanks for sharing your thoughts.
My pleasure, Bill. Take care.
You too.